Greetings, everyone. It is now time for Marked Safe, tales of your very favorite and most beloved man-made disasters. On Marked Safe, we discuss events and details that some may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Please listen responsibly. And now, here with your hosts, Brianne and Melanie, this is Marked Safe.
Good morning, Melanie.
Good morning.
Bright and early.
This is definitely the earliest we've ever recorded. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Do you? You like this?
I love it.
Okay. I didn't know this is what you were into.
It's so, my kink. Early morning podcast recording.
Thank God, I finally found your kink. I've been trying this whole time.
Some people like it at night.
I like it in the morning.
I like it in the morning. I haven't brushed my teeth. Still sexy,
nice,
though.
Nice. Absolutely. So this will be our last episode because it's my favorite, so we can wrap it up after this.
It's technically the last for the new year, right?
Hey, yeah. So yes, this episode is my Christmas present to me.
And to me.
And to you. I don't know if you'll like it as much as I do. It is old-timey, so maybe you will.
Oh, I definitely will. I'm really intrigued by this because I got zero spoilers. Uh-huh. I don't think that's ever happened.
I'm not even going to put a spoiler in the title.
Yeah.
This is my big top secret episode.
I love it.
Okay. I have to double check my sound waves so I don't have to record this twice.
Wouldn't that be some shit?
I think we should jump right into it.
I love it. Let's do
it. Since we are just jumping right into this recording bright and early this morning, while the sun is still morning light. It's weird. Okay. I am going to tell you the story of a family as much as the story of a disaster today.
All right.
But I think you're going to like it.
Okay.
I am going to tell you the story of Joseph LaRouche and his family. And here we go. Joseph LaRouche was born in Haiti on May 26th, 1886.
It's old timey.
It is old timey, yes. He was a talented child with a knack for tinkering, and his family had serious means. They were a wealthy family. And when he was 15, he decided that he wanted to study engineering, but Haiti didn't have an engineering school. So he and a teacher went to France to study it. I assume that must have been commonly done. I'd never really heard of that, but I'm not from France in the 1800s. So.
Right.
So he lived with his teacher in France, and he did very well in school. He was very smart, very talented. During his time there, his teacher accepted an invitation to go visit a friend who lived nearby who sold wine, and his teacher invited Joseph to tag along with him.
That's a good friend.
I know, because I mean, he couldn't have known many people there, and you know,
the had friend has kinda, wine,
right? Yes. So Joseph said absolutely, and they went together. And while they were visiting, Joseph met the friend's daughter, Juliet. Juliet was 3 years younger than him. She was French, of course. She was a white woman. She didn't speak any English, but Joseph was fluent in English, French, and Creole. So they could still communicate, yes. Her mother had died young. She lived with her father. She was the only daughter in an upper-middle-class family. This is just a weird aside, and I'm not the only person who's noticed this. No one can seem, as far as I can find, nobody, even major historians with this family, can find any indication that her father had any issue with her marrying a black man.
During that time?
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty fucking cool.
It seems like he was good with it. I mean, as you'll see as the story goes on, he sounds like a really good egg. But, I mean, it just doesn't even come up at all. I don't know. That's wonderful, but weird.
It's, for that time, strange. Yeah. Very, very strange.
Yeah, Joseph and Juliet fell in love. They wanted to get married, but her father didn't allow it until Joseph had finished his engineering degree, which he did, and they did get married. So even though Joseph was a very intelligent, very educated engineer, and there were lots of jobs for someone with his background in Paris, it was still the early 1900s, and above all, more than being intelligent or talented or educated, he was Black. And the whole world was not Juliet's dad's.
Right.
So it was very hard for him to find work. He briefly worked for, oh, I didn't write it down. I want to say maybe a train line or something like that. When he did, they would come up with BS reasons to pay him horribly.
As they do so many times.
As they do. They had support and housing from Juliet's dad. He was really just supporting them in their life as newlyweds. But they wanted to have their own life. They wanted to stand on their own feet. Joseph loved his family dearly, and he wanted to be the one to provide for them. It doesn't sound like there was any bad blood whatsoever between, like, Joseph and Juliet's dad, or the whole situation sounds like it was great, but he just wanted to be, you know, that guy, like most men would.
The man of the house.
Yeah, he wanted to provide for his family. He didn't want to be a mooch.
Right.
So he and Juliet talked and talked about it. They weighed their options. If they were to leave France, it would be a loss for Juliet. Her dad was elderly. He was widowed. It sounds like he was a wonderful dad. It sounds like they were close, and she hated to leave him.
Right.
They had a daughter named Simone, Juliet and Joseph did. And then they had another 16 months later named Louise, who was born prematurely. And the girls were absolutely adorable. And I mean, seriously adorable. And when Joseph was with them, he exuded pride. You could just see it on his face.
Aw, but they were little daddy's girls.
I bet they were. And Louise was frail. Remember, she was early. And she got sick a lot as an infant. And her medical bills were piling up. You know, they were always worried about her. They had to have felt like they were really outgrowing the confines they were working with, literally and financially, like the confines of their living quarters and just all of it.
Right.
So they finally decided that their best bet was to move back to Haiti. Joseph would bring Juliet, Simone, and Louise back to where he'd been born and would be able to find work. He felt like Haiti was still kind of a developing country, and an engineer, you know, they were slowly modernizing, so surely there would be lots of opportunities for an engineer.
Well, yeah, and then you see that a lot, like, even today, where you have these smaller villages and stuff, where, mm-hmm. you know, a resident or a local will become, like, a doctor or whatever, but then they'll move where the job yes. is, and it doesn't benefit their yes. home.
I think they call that brain drain.
What?
I think they call that brain drain.
I think you're right.
I could be full of shit. Anyway. also, Joseph's uncle, Cincinnatus, which, what a name.
I am looking for boy names.
Petition to name the Sasquatch that if you're too good for John Mellencamp. his uncle, Cincinnatus, had already lined up a job for him teaching math when he got to Haiti, and he said Joseph would be able to work his way up to headmaster, which Cincinnatus definitely should have been able to pull those strings because he was the freaking president of Haiti.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I told you they had means, and it tells you something about this era that the nephew of the president of Haiti can't even find engineer work in France because he's a Black man.
That's so fucking sad.
But man, it also says something about Juliet's dad.
Yes.
That apparently didn't even come up. So they started making travel plans to get back to Haiti from France. And as they were working on that, they found out that Juliet was pregnant again.
Girl.
And, right, traveling with two toddlers and a baby would have been a lot, as you know all too well.
Yep.
So they decided to bump up the date by about 6 months. So they would only be traveling with two children. She wouldn't be hugely pregnant yet. And the third would be a Haitian citizen.
And they're boating it too. So it's like,
Yeah.
Man, I'm yeah. vomit city as it is.
Right?
Do not fucking put me on a boat.
God, I know. So that, these little details just make this story so interesting to me because, I mean, those are the exact same considerations we would have now.
Right.
like, are you traveling with a baby? Are you traveling when you're a little pregnant or when you're hugely pregnant? You're going to be carrying the younger toddler around.
Some things never change.
You know, how hard is it going to be to transfer citizenship? Like, all of it, it's just nothing changes. It would be the exact same thing now. So at the time that they traveled, this is, if my math is correct, which, no, I mean, it's probably not, but I think it was. At the time that they traveled, Juliet would only be like 8 or 12 weeks along.
Holy crap. Yeah. So they moved that quickly.
Yes. And my God, they really must have relied on regular cycles back then, shouldn't they have? Because like, if I didn't have like pregnancy tests, and mine are so irregular, if I were trying to conceive, there's no way in hell I could know before I was 8 weeks.
Well, shit, I thought it was 8 weeks and I wound up being, right? 12 weeks.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just can't imagine back in this time era being that confident that you're even pregnant. But I mean, she was, so okay.
Well, I was a third, I guess, when you know. I mean,
yeah, I guess. That's just wild to me to be like, oh, I didn't have my period and I got a couple symptoms. I'm pregnant.
She's probably like, I want a baguette.
Right. Yeah, I guess that could be a sign. So like I said, this was from a wealthy and well-connected family. And his mom, Joseph's mom back in Haiti, was thrilled that they would be returning home to raise their family.
Aww.
So she booked tickets for them on the SS France, first class, paying for them herself as a welcome home gift. But there's a problem. So you have cruised before.
Yes. Don't you miss it?
Oh my God, I do. Did you ever... But I feel like I was never much of a germaphobe before this, but I feel like I might be after. I don't know. It's just like I think about some of the things we used to do, like eating birthday cake that somebody just blew on. And I'm like, how is that ever going to feel normal again?
It won't.
And I mean, I don't feel like I was ever sick too particularly often before that. So, I mean, obviously we were fine, but things like just being in like a densely packed place with no masks, I can't imagine
that, right?
Not feeling dangerous, even when it's not really that dangerous anymore. But we'll see. Someone who's listening to this from the future, how are things?
I wonder how, like, this is just a total random thought, like, germaphobes, like, how are they handling the pandemic? Is this just like, well, I'm doing this stuff already, like,
well, I'm
kind of ahead of everybody else.
I think so. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure some of them must just be really struggling, because if they were, you know, afraid of it before, and now they really have like a reason to be afraid of it. That's right. Awful. I do know someone, one of the kids' grandmothers, who has always been very particular about cleanliness and germs, which is, you know, fine. But like more so than most people. And it does seem like she was just kind of like, yeah, I'm ahead of you guys.
Business
as usual. I already
washed
my hands.
Let me teach you the ways.
Yeah. So, and I mean, she doesn't have COVID. So do with that what you will. So back to cruising. When you did you have kids yet?
Yeah, so I've just been on one cruise. We went to the Bahamas. We did like our honeymoon. So we had Ava, and we actually pushed it back till Aria was 6 months. Because there was like, I can't remember, there was like some weird, like she couldn't use some of the things. I think it was like, God, I cannot remember now why we waited until she was 6 months.
Is it like a kids club thing?
I think so, but that wouldn't make sense because I wouldn't leave my kids anywhere by themselves. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I was going to ask if you ever did or would send them to like a kids club on a cruise ship, like a little nursery play place thing.
If I knew now what I knew then, like as a parent, not as someone in the middle of a pandemic, then probably, yes, I would be like, take these fucking kids. I want a pina colada. Mama needs a break. But we didn't. You know, now I'm like, I'm four kids deep. And I'm like,
yeah.
Why didn't I? You know, everything sounded so doomsday back then.
Yeah. Oh, for what it's worth, I did with Adelaide and I hated it and she hated it and everyone hated it. She was about two and the Disney Dream has the Oceaneers Club and I didn't want to send her to it. It didn't feel right. She was, clingy isn't even the word for her.
Right.
And she had a seizure disorder at that age. She's outgrown it now, but she did then. And if she got herself too worked up and too upset, it would raise her risk for seizures.
Right.
So I didn't want to take her there, but it was kind of just like a general societal peer pressure of, you know,
right,
maybe that mom who doesn't, you know, let your kids spread their wings at the Oceaneers Club or whatever. So we did take her, and they give you a phone that you carry around the ship that they can call you on, because you don't have, you know, regular phone reception. They're not going to page parents back and forth. So it's kind of like almost like walkie talkies, but this weird bulky phone. And I told them basically, if she starts crying and doesn't stop in like 30 seconds, just call me. I don't want that going on. And I don't have any problem calling. I don't have any problem coming back. Like, we're not really doing anything. Well, they didn't. They let her cry for like 10 minutes.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And they finally called and they were like, you should probably come pick up your daughter. She's been crying for like 10, 15 minutes and we can't calm her down. And I was like, are you kidding me?
They probably thought they were doing you a favor. Like, oh, we can take care of this. But what people don't realize is, like, you know your fucking kid.
Yes. And I mean, if that was their default, actually, I would get that and probably think that was appropriate, because most parents and most kids probably don't want to be called if their kid's been crying for 5 minutes. But I didn't even want her crying for 1 minute because of the seizure thing.
Right.
And I had told them that. Like, I even wrote it down in her sign-in form. So I was pissed. And it kind of, like, I was not having fun while she was there in the first place. I was so worried, and then I was so mad, and it was awful, so I hated it. So I'm very sympathetic to the problem, which is that the SS France had a policy about kids, and Joseph and Juliet hated it. They had to spend the entire trip, I think, in the nursery, and they could not dine with their parents.
Really?
Yeah, the wording is kind of murky on whether they had to literally spend the entire trip in the nursery. I kind of think they did. I know for sure they couldn't dine with their parents. And Joseph and Juliet were not about that at all. They were very hands-on parents, very focused on their children. They adored them.
Right.
And you will see that later when I get into a letter that Juliet writes to her dad. It's just, I feel like it's a little bit out of step for what you would expect for the times, because the whole thing is just about the different things that the girls have done and what the girls have enjoyed and the girls' sleeping arrangements and the girls' nap times and what the girls are eating and everything. And I don't feel like that was really typical for the times.
Maybe they were time travelers.
Maybe they were. They seemed like attachment parents, and I respect it. So, I mean, that's them. And Louise was a sickly child, and she was only going to be 21 months old when they sailed. So when they found out about the SS France's policy, they were just like, no, I'm not about that. They wanted their kids with them, so they swapped out their tickets for second class tickets on a different ship. Not sure if it was the same line. What is it called? It's not a cruise line, like a, you know, it's like a ship line. You know what I'm talking about.
I think it's a cruise line, right?
I don't know. But I'm not sure if it was within the same line or what. But they did swap out their tickets for second class tickets on this other ship. And this plan was originally going to take them out in a smaller ship from Cherbourg, France. I'm probably mangling that pronunciation. To a larger one that the harbor in Cherbourg couldn't accommodate. So with Simone Louise and pregnant Juliet, Joseph traveled to the harbor in France. And they waited there with a friend whose name, this is so irrelevant to everything, but I just thought it was adorable. His name is Mr. Renard, which means Mr. Fox.
Aww.
I know.
I do love that.
I know. I thought you would. So they waited there for the first train in their journey with his friend, Mr. Renard. And he bought each one of the girls a balloon.
Oh! know.
Right? Like, these parenting details in this story just get me. Because I feel like you never get to hear that kind of stuff about, like, the 1800s, 1900s.
No.
And, I mean, it had to be happening. Why wouldn't it be? But you never hear it. And that just seems like not necessarily even the culture at the time, but there's so many details about these little girls and their family, and I love it. That's why I included this whole thing with the balloon. It couldn't be less relevant.
I mean, it's kind of think about that balloons were around back then.
I should have looked into that, because I was like, yeah, that's a rabbit hole I wanted to go down and ran out of time. So Louise was sitting in her pram. Remember, she's 21 months old in the sunshine. She was laughing and her balloon blew away, and then Mr. Renard ran to buy her a new one so she'd stop crying. And then they had this long train ride, and while they were on it, they met this other family called the Malay family, who would be also sailing with them on the same ship. And there, in that family, there was also a French and English speaking husband. They were just an all white family, but a French English speaking husband, a French speaking wife, and a little boy named Andre. I think roughly the same age as the girls. Little. So when they arrived, they boarded the SS Nomadic, which took them out into the ocean a bit, and then it was the evening when they crossed a gangway and boarded the RMS Titanic.
Brian!
Yeah!
I just got goosebumps!
This is the story of the only black family on the Titanic.
Oh my God, I have freaking goosebumps right now.
I was in the shower before this and I was listening to the Titanic soundtrack. And Eric came in and was like, Jesus Christ. And I was like, I have to play it cool or Melanie is going to know what it is based on how excited I am about it. And he was like, she already knows. You know she knows.
No, I didn't know. I literally, like, the hairs are standing up on my arm. I have goosebumps. I am so excited about this. Never heard this.
Yeah, I hadn't either. And do you remember I said that I really wanted to do the Titanic, but I couldn't. I'm not just going to retell the Titanic story. I had to find some angle of it that everyone doesn't already know. And boy, did I find it.
This is so cool, Brianne.
Now, remember, one of the ghouls has a 10-year-old Titanic super fan, so I'm going to make the audio guy bleep out profanity.
Oh, okay. And I'll be... See, if you would have given me a hint, I would have been watching my mouth. But then
if I would have given you a hint, you would have known.
I would have known because you had mentioned that whenever you did this, that you would be beeping. So from here on out, I will watch my sailor mouth. Okay.
Nice. I like that.
I really love that you hyped yourself up with the, I have a mental picture of you just jamming in the shower to the Titanic soundtrack.
You have no idea. It was so bad. I have been dying not telling you.
Oh my gosh. My face, I feel like I'm on a first date because I'm smiling so big that my cheeks are hurting. I'm so happy you're as excited as I am. Yes.
And wait till you hear this story because it gets it. Oh, okay. So, this is a great opportunity to talk about second-class life on the Titanic, which is something I know so little about, it almost kind of breaks my brain to think about the fact that it existed, because it's just like, it's like, you know it's there, but it's just a total blank spot in my understanding of the Titanic, which I think it might be for other people.
Right.
I don't think it's, okay, so... I saw from basically every source that the Titanic overall was so luxurious that second class for them was basically first class on other ships, and third class was more like second on other ships, and there was no equivalent to other ships third class. So for example, these are just a few little compare and contrast with the different classes just to give you kind of a picture of what the second class was like. So, for example, there was a first-class dining room that we all have a pretty clear mental image of from the movie. You know, ornately carved wood, insanely bougie food, douchebag men, a live orchestra. third-class passengers had their own dining room with basic but decent food available, and I guess there was plenty of it. But on most third-class areas of ships, you had to bring your own food for the entire journey.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's not clear to me whether you, like, could, was there a way to cook it? How did that work? I don't know. I would like to know. I ran out of time because I had so much to dig into with this episode.
Probably a lot of jerky.
Probably, but you had to normally bring your own, but they actually did have a dining room with food that was fresh, hot, cooked food, even for third class. Second class had a dining room with nice mahogany furniture with red upholstery and a live pianist.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, but not a full live orchestra like the first class.
I will never, ever, never mind. I'll keep this one to myself since we're bleeping.
Okay, tell me later.
It was something about pianist and how I always think of a different word.
Oh, Melanie, you're so crass. So the third class had a general, well, hold on. The first class had cafes, a gym, a reading room, restaurants, a smoking room, squash courts, a swimming pool, and a writing room. It's ridiculous. Third class had a general room with a piano they could use, and a smoke room just for the men. And the freaking gender division even in the third class.
Of course.
Second class had a library where afternoon tea was served, 3 outdoor promenade decks, and a smoking room. So here's some stuff. As far as sleeping, the first class... did you know there were 2 different levels of first class?
I did not know that.
I didn't either. As far as sleeping, so there was first class parlor rooms, and those were all suites. They had 2 bedrooms each, 2 walk-in wardrobes, a living room, and a private bathroom. And I assume that I'm going to tell you what that would have cost. I'm not completely clear on how long that money would have gotten you. I assume just the entire A to B trip.
Right.
But the first class parlor rooms in today's money would have cost about $117,000.
Oh my gosh. So that's like a Kardashian, like, presidential boat suite.
Yeah. So that's like a pretty nice house in a small town in Indiana.
Right. Forever. That you can live in forever. Forever.
And not die in, probably.
Right.
But there was also first class berth, which was about $4,000 in today's money, but still considered first class. I mean, $4,000 is a lot, I guess, but I mean, relative to just a cruise, not really.
Yeah, not really at all.
No. Third class had cabins that could sleep 10 with bunk beds in the loudest part of the ship, and it would have been about $1,100 to sail third class. Second class also had cabins with bunk beds, but I believe they were usually single family rooms, and the bathrooms were shared in second class, but the rooms did have sinks, mirrors, and fresh bed linen every day, and it would have cost about $1,600 in today's money. Something interesting that I came across, and I guess I never thought about this, I mean, I guess it's obvious, but it kind of creeped me out a little bit. All of the ship's taps pulled water from a freshwater tank in the ship.
Huh.
And I mean, I guess, they said it was a huge freshwater tank, which it would have to be.
With that many people.
I mean, I guess that must be the case for all cruise ships, but I never really thought about it, and it kind of creeps me out.
Always, plumbing is so fascinating.
It really is.
I had, I worked at this job called Ruby's Diner, and it was at the end of the, it was in California, and almost all of them are at the end of a pier. And so, like, after my training, they were basically like, do you have any questions? And I'm like, this is completely not work-related, but I have to know, where do the toilets flush? Because you're at the end of the pier, and it's a restaurant. Like, where does that sewage go? Like, surely not in the ocean. It's just a bunch of long pipes that go all the way back to land.
Oh, wow. Jesus.
But, okay. I mean, that's a long travel time for some doo-doo.
Yeah, I would like to know more about the waste aspect of the Titanic, which this will not be my only episode about Titanic. I have one other episode. It'll be a while, but maybe in 6 months or so. I have one other episode highlighting a specific passenger that I want to do. But then maybe like 6 months after that, I want to do one about myths, misconceptions, little known facts. And I think that would, I would really like to dig a little more into how waste management worked in that one.
Yes, please. I love that.
You love waste.
Okay. I love poop.
Noted. The Titanic was the first ship to have an electric elevator for the second class. Second class and lower tier first class rooms were very similar. So the second class and the berth first tier, the berth first class. And some of them, and this seems like a ripoff to me, were even technically able to be used as either one, depending on demand.
Hmm.
Which...
yeah.
Okay. I feel like... Hmm. Yeah. I feel like there would be a YouTube expose about that in 2020 when some cruiser did a review of the ship and was like, hold on. Yeah. I paid more money and got the same room.
It would not fly, that is for sure.
No. Well, Titanic was only in service for 5 days, so they didn't make it to YouTube.
Or Yelp.
No Yelp. Ultimately, the loss of life was directly tied to class, but it was devastating across the board. 39% of first class passengers died. 58% of second class passengers died, and 76% of third class passengers died.
That's so heartbreaking.
Yeah. So you can know from the outset that our second class family that we're following here has slightly worse than 50-50 odds.
Mm.
So they enjoyed their time, and they enjoyed their children fully for those days. And when they docked in Ireland, Juliet wrote this letter to her father. It is long, but it paints such a picture, like with the stuff that we were talking about just the daily life with kids.
Right.
That hopefully someone other than me finds as interesting as I do, or this is going to be a boring minute here.
I love this stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to read you the whole thing because I just love it. It paints such a picture of this moment in time with two little kids.
It's a snapshot.
Mm-hmm. So she says, "My dear Dad, I have just been told that we are going to stop in a moment, so I take this opportunity to drop you a few lines and tell you about us. We boarded the Titanic last evening at 7 o'clock. If you could see this monster, our tender looked like a fly compared to her. The tender is the Nomadic that took them to the Titanic. The arrangements could not be more comfortable. We have two bunks in our cabin, and the two babies sleep on a sofa that converts into a bed. One is at the head, the other at the bottom. A board put before them prevents them from falling. They're as well, if not better, than in their beds. The boat set out when we were eating, and we could not believe she was moving. We are less shaken than in a train. We just feel a slight trepidation. The girls ate well last night. They only took a nap in the whole night, and the chime of the bell announcing breakfast woke them up. Louise laughed a lot at it. At the moment they are strolling on the enclosed deck with Joseph, Louise is in her pram, Simone is pushing her. They have already become acquainted with people we made the trip from Paris with, a gentleman and his lady and their little boy, that's the Malay family with Andre, who is the same age as Louise. I think they are the only French people on the boat, so we sat at the same table so that we could chat together. Simone was so funny a moment ago. She was playing with a young English girl who had lent her doll. My Simone was having a great conversation with her, but the girl could not understand a single word. People on board are very nice. Yesterday they were both running after a gentleman who had given them chocolates. This morning I tried to count all the children on the boat. In second class only, I'm sure there are more than 20. There is a small family with 4 children. They remind me of my uncles. The youngest looks very much like Fat Marcel." Poor Marcel. "I am writing from the reading room. There is a concert in here near me. 1 violin, 2 cellos, 1 piano. Up to now I have not felt seasick. I hope it will go on this way. The sea is very smooth, the weather is wonderful. If you could see how big this ship is. One can hardly find the way back to one's cabin in the number of corridors. I will stop here for now. I believe we are going to put in, and I wouldn't like to miss the mail. Once again, thank you, my dear Dad, for all your marks of bounty towards us, and receive all the warmest kisses from your loving daughter, Juliet. Warmly kiss for us all our dear grandmother, Maurice, Marguerite, and Madeline. Little Simone and Louise kiss their good grandfather. They just had their dresses on this morning, and they wanted to go and see you."
Oh.
Yeah. So
I love that.
Right? It really, it it just paints a picture. Ugh. So this is interesting because when she wrote that letter, her family had only been on the Titanic for one day. And many historians have said that, quote, racism was rampant on the ship and many passengers and crew were very ugly to them. Her letter doesn't have that tone at all.
Right.
And there could be a lot of reasons for that. Maybe it just hadn't happened yet, but it would. Maybe it didn't happen. I don't know that there are very specific examples of what may have happened. There's just a general people saying they were mean to them, but I don't know if there's any account of it or if we're just kind of figuring it must have. Maybe it didn't. Maybe she just didn't want to worry or upset her dad in the letter.
Right.
Maybe she's one of those people who just kind of lasers on the good aspects of something and kind of ignores the bad, which would honestly be a pretty useful trait for a white woman married to a black man in 1912, because you're
right.
You're going to be dealing with people so much, you might as well just focus on your very happy family.
And, yeah, not dwell on it.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know what it was. You know, a lot of people have wondered. A lot of people have researched. Obviously, I have nothing to add to that that hasn't already been discussed.
Speculated, yeah. Yeah.
At least some of the passengers didn't even realize the girls' ethnicities. There was a letter from a fellow second-class passenger, Mary Buss, and I guess after the sinking, whoever she sent it to, you know, just got kind of entered into the historical record. And then when people eventually found out about the LaRouche family, they looked back and said, oh. She said, there are two of the finest little Japanese baby girls, about 3 or 4 years old, who look like dolls running about. And she was also in the second class, so I mean, that pretty much had to have been Simone and Louise.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they were aboard the ship from, you know, 7 p.m. on that first day. It sounds like they had dinner after that, and then, you know, the rest of the evening, and then 3 more full days. And on the last day, on April 14th, as everybody knows, I'm not going to retell the whole story of the Titanic. Go watch the movie. The crew received 6 reports of dangerous ice in the water, but they did not slow down. The ship continued forward at full speed. At 11:40 p.m., the ship hit an iceberg in the Atlantic Ocean. Juliet and the girls were asleep, with the girls at either end of their bed. And that detail kills me, because do you remember in the letter to her dad, she talked about how they slept in this converted, the couch that folds out into
a bed.
Yeah, folds out into a bed, and they sleep basically on either end of it. First of all, when we cruised with Adelaide, she slept on a couch that folded out into a bed. So that detail just, ugh. And then when we, you know, we've had our foster daughter for about a year, and she's about Adelaide's age. And when we first moved here, because we moved with her, when we first moved to this house, you know, they were in a new room. Obviously, everything was still new to her at that point, but it was even newer because she'd also just moved. And they had a bunk bed, but sometimes she would, for about the first couple weeks, she would get too scared and want to sleep. They would want to sleep on the same one. So right. They, once in a while, they would sleep. We called it feet to feet. And,
right.
You know, it would be bedtime, and they'd say, can we sleep feet to feet tonight? And it sounds like the girls were sleeping feet to feet, and that just, oh.
Yeah, to know me. What that looks like.
Yes, yes. Joseph was in the smoking room with the other second-class men, which, as an aside there, it sounds like he, again, not to discount the racism that probably happened, but it sounds like he had kind of a commanding presence and, you know, was so educated and so intelligent, and just he
probably disarmed them.
I feel like I'm saying this in a way that's crappy, but I hope that you and everyone knows what I mean. It sounds like he could hold his own with these people, and
right.
I don't mean that to say, oh my god, he was so articulate for a black man. That's not what I mean.
No,
I just mean that given the time and given the context, that's not automatically what you would assume.
Right.
That he could kind of mingle with these people. And that's more about them than him. But I think that it also speaks to sort of the force of his personality and that he still could.
Right.
And I feel like there, someone could say that the way I'm phrasing that is problematic. I'm just going to trust that you know what I mean, and it's not that. So when the impact happened, Joseph ran to his family to check on them, and at the same time, a steward came to tell them that there had been an accident. Juliet didn't speak English, and she was very confused by everything that was going on, but Joseph did, obviously, and he must have understood because he packed all their valuables into his pockets, and then he and Juliet each scooped up one of their sleeping children from their beds and carried them sleeping to the upper boat deck, where they waited for quite a while. And that also just, ugh.
Yeah.
You, every parent in the world knows, just when for some reason you have to get your kid out of bed, and they're that age, just, you know, they're in that warm little cocoon, they're sleeping, you pick them up and they kind of nuzzle toward you a little bit, and they
have that, you know, little arm dangling down.
Yes, yes. It's just so vivid. Every parent in the world knows exactly what I'm talking about.
You
so
get
just,
that ding dang drool mark on your shoulder.
Yes, but then you get that sleeping kid smell.
It's the best.
And it's just, you know, there's that little cocoon of just warmth and peacefulness and just that feeling when you have to lift them out of it and they stay asleep. It's just, it's a whole mood. It's a whole feeling. And the detail they, and you know, another thing is the way you divide and conquer as parents. And just the detail that they each scooped up one of them
right
from their beds where they were sleeping feet to feet and carried them to the deck just ripped my heart in half. So they got to the upper boat deck. They waited for a while. I don't know, but I mean, I have to imagine that with the tension and all the classes just shoved together unexpectedly, at the very least, it had to have been uncomfortable to be the only Black family just standing in that crowd. I think that would probably be a little uncomfortable now if you were
right.
The only Black person in a sea of white people in a tense, unexpected situation. That would always be uncomfortable. I don't know if anything happened then, but I think we can infer that that must have been an added source of tension during that. So
I'm so uncomfortable right now.
Yeah. Once they started, I mean, I'll tell you in advance that nothing horrific happens race-wise.
Okay.
I mean, there's definitely some yuck, but nothing, there's not like a major hate crime about to happen or anything. Okay. So once they started launching lifeboats, Joseph saw Juliet into a lifeboat. It was probably either number 8 or 14, along with a countess who was probably Noelle Leslie, Countess of Roths. And I realized 30 seconds before we started recording, she was in the movie.
Oh, really?
Yes. Okay. Are you familiar with the movie? 'Cause
yes.
I don't want to assume that every other person in the world knows every single line from that movie like I do.
Yes, love the movie.
Okay. Do you remember the part?
I saw it in theaters.
I saw it in theaters 7 times, and then I saw it in theaters again in the 2000s when they re-released it in 3D.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I didn't see the re-release.
Yeah, I think I saw it twice. I am a super fan. So, do you remember the part where Rose is talking to, I'm fairly certain it was Jack, and it's the part where he goes to dinner with them in the, you know, bougie room, and she's kind of whispering the gossip about all the different passengers.
Yes.
And do you remember where she says, there's the Countess of Roth, she's in delicate condition and trying to hide it?
Yes.
And the lady is in like a very beautiful, like cream colored ivory dress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's who Juliet was probably in the lifeboat with.
I cannot wait to get, like, when this is done, I'm watching the Titanic.
Absolutely. I just watched a clip from it because I looked up Noelle Leslie, Countess of Roths, to be sure about how it was pronounced.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a clip from the movie. And I was like, oh my God, she is in the movie.
That's freaking cool.
And then I watched it and it was the part with the Afghan hounds getting on board. And I was like, I have to watch this again. So Simone was, so Juliet got in the lifeboat. No, actually, hold on. Simone was in the lifeboat before Juliet. They pulled her away from them and like threw her into the boat, which terrified Juliet, which, I mean, that would terrify any mother anytime.
Right.
But it was more so because she didn't really understand what was happening. It was
because she spoke French.
She spoke French. It was total chaos. But then pretty right away, they pushed her in after. And, you know, that was better. But that left Joseph on the deck holding Louise up over his head. And he had an altercation with some sailors who I think didn't understand that Louise, who was very light-skinned, was actually his daughter. His
daughter, yeah.
And had been separated from Juliet and Simone, and there was some shoving and jostling. I don't think there was, like, a full-blown fight, but it was a tense moment, it sounds like. He did eventually get it across, and they took her from him and passed her to Juliet. And from the lifeboat, she heard Joseph yell to her, "See you soon, my dear. There will be room for everyone. Go, in the boats. Watch over our little girls. See you soon."
Oh, fuck.
He stayed and helped other women and children into the lifeboats. Juliet was positioned really low in the lifeboat, and it had freezing water in the bottom, and she didn't actually see the ship go under. They waited all night in the below freezing weather until the RMS Carpathia finally arrived the next morning. The Carpathia sent down burlap sacks to put the girls into and hauled them up and onto the ship, which...
Oh. I didn't know that. That's an interesting detail. Either.
I don't think that's how they got adults, but I mean, I guess you would have to think that having these survivors who are freezing almost to death, their hands have to be numb, you know, going up however they would have had them going up holding children was probably more dangerous than just sticking them in a burlap bag.
Right.
Which I'm sure it was, but Simone was only just newly three, but it was so terrifying that she would remember it for the rest of her life.
Oh, wow.
Joseph was not with them. Juliet searched and found that he was not aboard the Carpathia. And imagine being a French woman traveling with your trilingual husband and suddenly being alone in this chaotic situation with few or no other people who spoke your language.
Yeah, she was really, like, dependent on him. Like, he yes, just kind of...
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, just the whole, you know, everything's terrible. Where the hell's your husband? It's all bad. But, like, you lost your translator.
Right.
So, I mean, that alone is really bad. So, she held out hope that maybe he had been rescued by a different ship and she may find him when the Carpathia docked. In fact, she was told to expect that because the crew in the Carpathia told survivors that other ships had also collected survivors from the water and everyone would be reunited in New York.
Oof.
They probably just didn't want hysteria on the ship with all yeah. those people, which is, I get it, but ugh. So once they were on board, the logistics of life don't stop just because you've, like, just survived one of the worst maritime disasters in history. Now you're on a refugee ship with no one else who speaks your language.
Kids still gotta eat.
Kids still gotta poop.
Yep.
Yeah. The ship was packed way beyond its normal capacity, and just simple things like linens were very scarce, which is what Juliet needed to diaper Simone and Louise. So she devised a way to handle it, which was sitting on napkins every time she had a meal and then smuggling them back to her cabin to use as diapers, which is another detail that I am obsessed with. So let me tell you a sidebar. So you know the coma that I had, right?
Right, right.
When I had the coma, Adelaide was 4.5 months old. And later, a few months later, I had to have an ERCP, which is like a scope. They put you under general anesthesia and they put a scope down your throat into your, you know, where your gallbladder would have been to check and see what's up in there.
Oh, that sounds awful.
It's horrendous. And I was terrified because nobody knew completely for sure. When I had the coma, they didn't totally know why. It seems ultimately like it was basically just blood loss. Basically, I just bled out and that did it. Because I had lost like something like 4 pints of blood. And...
Jeez.
Not 4 pints, 4 liters.
Good God,
I think it was like maybe 3.8 liters or something like that. By the way, donate blood if you can. Not you, everyone. But you, yeah. You too. Because if people didn't, I would not be here. So a few months after that, or a couple months, it was in July, so Adelaide would have been about 7 months old, I had to have this ERCP, and I was terrified. Because that was the first time I'd ever been under general anesthesia, was the coma itself. And we didn't know if I was just allergic to anesthesia, and that's what did it. But so I had to go back under general anesthesia, and I was scared absolutely out of my mind. And I mean, obviously I did survive and everything went smoothly other than the most horrific sore throat you can possibly imagine. But when I woke up in recovery, my husband and mom were there with Adelaide, and she had pooped a lot. And she was about 7 months old. And I think it was my fault. I think I was so stressed I had forgotten to pack diapers for anyone. But we were there. Nobody could leave.
You're such a mom right now saying it's my fault.
I mean, I'm pretty sure I was the one who packed the diaper bag, so I don't want to, like, throw my husband and mom under the bus like they don't know how to take care of a baby without me.
Oh, my gosh. But
I woke up, and I mean, I'm still completely groggy. I'm in the recovery room, and they're, you know, freaking out because this baby is pooping. No one knows what to do. And I, like, push myself up on my elbow, and I jury-rigged a diaper from materials in the room.
Oh, my gosh.
Was half under general anesthesia and changed her butt and made this fake diaper. I don't even remember what it was made out of, but it was quite a feat of engineering, if I do say so. And it worked. It kept her sorted out till we got all the way back home. So Juliet smuggling these diapers.
A total weirdo. You know, you probably could have asked them for a diaper.
I think we tried that.
Oh, really?
I don't think there were any around.
I'm just saying that because I've been in that situation a couple of times because I actually don't pack diapers anymore. I know that sounds crazy. That's a crazy gamble.
Yes.
But I just don't have time for that.
I was real fast and loose with diaper bags, so I can't say anything about that. I was just kind of always like 99% of the stuff I pack we're never going to use. And most of the time, we can run into Walmart and buy one. So, yeah, I get that. I was a real half-ass diaper bag packer. But on this occasion, I had definitely meant to pack diapers, but I didn't. But I figured it out halfway under general anesthesia.
That's really impressive.
It was like the anesthetized version of Chopped for childcare, basically. You have 30 seconds before your baby gets a rash. You're barely conscious, and you have the materials in this random recovery room. Go. So, yeah, that detail with the linens, it spoke to me. So good news and bad news on the Carpathia, as far as camaraderie, I guess, which was that she found Madame Millet, that she had been with on the train and been with on the ship, that she wrote the letter about her dad to her dad about.
Right.
Madame Millet has come up throughout this, and she was also in the Carpathia. So they kind of leaned on each other a bit during the trip, but the problem was it was Madame Millet and Andre. Her husband also wasn't there. And if you remember, she only spoke French.
Oh.
So at least they had each other to speak to, but neither one of them could function as a translator at all.
Right.
So
it's two left shoes,
but I mean, at least they had each other in this horrific situation, but wasn't really helpful logistically. I don't think.
Something's better than nothing, but
yeah, it's something in terms of emotional support, wonderful in terms of logistical support,
nightmare.
Yeah. So April 18th, the Carpathia reached New York City, which was the same place the Titanic had been headed for. And I don't know if this is going to blow your mind because you don't know where things are on maps, but did you know that Haiti is very close to New York City, I think?
I didn't know that.
I didn't either, and I didn't double check this, but I found a couple sources that said that basically once they got to New York City, Haiti would have been basically miles away.
Oh, really?
I don't quote me on that. I am quoting someone, and I was like, that's crazy, but there's so much that's crazy about maps, I'm going to assume it's probably true.
I'm looking this up.
Okay, I'll pause while you look it up, because I really want to look it up, but my phone's almost dead. My husband never sent a child to help me with that. Why would they say that?
You got a bum sore. I was like, I thought Haiti was like more Florida.
Well, I think relative to crossing the Atlantic Ocean, that's not that far.
That's probably what they meant.
Yeah. I don't think it's like right off the coast of New York City or something, but I think it would have been a relatively short journey.
Yeah.
Compared to the one they just made.
Yeah, because it's like Haiti, you got Jamaica. I was going to say that did not sound right, but I didn't want to be like, because I wasn't for sure either.
Yeah. I am
I'm not the map expert yet, Brianne. I'm working on it.
Yet. You're building that skill. So they reached New York City, which is also where Titanic had been headed, and Juliet searched the crowds. She tried to find Joseph. He wasn't there. He had died in the water, and his body was never found. He was 25 years old.
That fucking breaks my heart.
25 years old.
It's a baby.
Yeah. So she later said, "It was only when we arrived in New York that we knew it entirely, and it's appalling reality." There was no point in continuing on to Haiti without Joseph. So after being treated in the hospital for her feet, which had pretty bad frostbite from the bottom of the lifeboat, the water in it, she took the girls home and went back home to grieve and wait out the rest of her pregnancy in France. She kept the girls very close to her. She dressed in black. She also dressed the girls in black. In August, she received word that Joseph's uncle, Cincinnatus, the president of Haiti, had been assassinated. So,
Oh, wow, shit.
What a year. In December, about 2 months after her 22nd birthday, she delivered her baby, who was a boy. And she named him Joseph.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I know this is so archaic, but, like, for, like, you know, the man's, like, kind of carrying on that lineage.
Yeah, and anyone who has an issue with that can fight me in this case. So they all stayed with Juliet's dad, but he knew that his wine-selling business could not support the whole family forever.
Real quick, I'm super fucking bummed about Grandma in Haiti.
Oh, okay. Why? Because I'm circling back to that. Go on.
Well, just because it's like, well, she just lost her son. And then her daughter-in-law is like, oh, there's no reason to go. Let's turn around.
Hold that thought.
Okay.
Although, generally speaking, I'm inclined to agree because it super sucks for her. But, like, if you're Juliet, first of all, the kids have lived with her dad their whole lives.
Right.
And, I mean, she
You're trying
support.
To get some sort of normalcy back in
your life.
Yeah, and she's
a 22-year-old widow with three kids. So, I mean, I don't really blame her.
Yeah, I'm not trying to shame. I was just like, poor grandma.
Well, hold your horses on that. So her dad told her that she should sue the White Star Line, which she did. And there was a protracted legal battle. And after that, she wound up with 150,000, is it francs or francs?
Francs,
yeah. Which is very roughly, and I can't really account for how the exchange rate between francs and the U.S. dollar has changed over the years. But if I translate that to U.S. dollars and then do, you know, the inflation calculator on that, it seems like it's very roughly equivalent to about 500,000 U.S. dollars now.
Okay.
Which, you know, that's, it sounds like a lot, but when it comes to the fact that you're not going to have really a breadwinner for the rest of your life and have three kids to raise, it's not that much.
No, it's not that much at all. You know,
but
I think
it's a
about
good
this,
start.
Yeah, I think about this, you know, a lot, you know, because I mean, realistically, I'm very codependent on my husband.
Yeah.
You know, when we first got together, we could barely afford butter, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, you know, talking about it, he was out of the military, he got, you know, free education, so it was just like a no-brainer for us that, you know, he needed to go to school and pursue his career. It was free, you know. Mm-hmm. You'd be dumb not to use it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's how his aviation career started, which is scary enough because so much stuff can happen. But I think of, you know, it's just, it happens, you know, because he's in aviation, I think, mm-hmm. all the time. What happens if, mm-hmm. you know, he dies in a helicopter crash? I would be absolutely fucked. You know,
same.
I'm not saying that,
same.
That, you know, I can't pull myself up by the bootstraps and figure it out. But
yeah, but
I'm
that
a
would
stay
be a
at
rough
home mom.
Up. Yeah.
with about five kids.
Yeah.
And the price of childcare, I mean, I'm very fortunate to where we are able that I can stay. I mean,
yeah.
There would be no other way. We would be losing money if I had to put my kids in childcare. Oh,
absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's just the reality. And it's not a, you know, before anybody says anything, because he's a man and I'm the woman and I'm doing this 1950s bullshit. No, it's just...
it's logistical most of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, and I know that there's a whole school of thought where it's like having a stay-at-home parent is a form of privilege. And, you know, and I get that. And sometimes, yes, but not always, because sometimes having both parents work, you would be losing money unless you both had extremely lucrative skills.
Right.
Just on childcare. So sometimes it's privilege, sometimes it's not.
We're just all doing the best we can.
So, I mean, if that happened, you can imagine that, you know, $500,000, that would buy you time to figure yourself out, like, in today's money. That you wouldn't be set for life, but you would have breathing room to figure out what you were going to do and get started doing it. Which is pretty much what Juliet did. She started a cloth dyeing business from a spare bedroom at home and was able to do okay.
She was hashtag boss babe.
Yes, they later lived through Nazi occupation, and she was so worried about her daughters being singled out because they were biracial that she took every single picture and every single thing that would connect them to Joseph and put them in a suitcase and buried the suitcase in the backyard.
She was doing everything she could to survive.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and she did later dig it up, and I mean, the stuff... very damaged, but it did survive, and you can see those pictures. So when the kids were 11, 10, and 8, Joseph's mother traveled from Haiti to see them. The visit went horribly.
Oh, no.
And an account that seems to have come from Louise says that she, quote, treated them like foreigners.
Really?
Uh-huh. She went back home, and they never saw her again.
That's really sad.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I guess if you wanted to give her the most generous possible interpretation, you could say that she was just so sad because Juliet kind of, I mean, I guess she would say probably Juliet screwed her, but I have other thoughts about that.
Well, I mean, yeah, I have thoughts about that too. It's never too late to reconnect with your grandchildren. Yeah,
it sounds, she sounds like a dick. here's something. Madame Millay, however, continued to visit for years.
Oh, I love that.
I know. She did eventually stop. I don't know what happened, but she visited regularly for years. Juliet's father eventually died, and she inherited his house. When their son Joseph grew up, he married a woman named Claudine, and they had three children. Louise joined the Titanic Historical Society in 1963, but barely communicated with them due to the language barrier, and they didn't even know their story or the significance of it at all. Simone died in 1973 at 64. She never married. Juliet died in 1980 at 91. She never remarried, and her headstone says, Juliet LaRouche, 1889 to 1980, wife of Joseph LaRouche, lost at sea on RMS Titanic, April 15th, 1912.
Oh.
Yeah. She suffered from foot pain her whole life from the frostbite she got in the lifeboat. And for a long time, the LaRouche family's legacy as the only Black family on the Titanic was erased completely for decades.
Because, of course.
Mm-hmm. People said for a long time that Black people weren't even allowed to be on the ship. There was this whole kind of mythology surrounding it that if I had gotten into that, it would have been like a 3-hour episode.
It's that whitewashing of history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was and I mean, to be fair, they were the only ones, but... the poet Langston Hughes said in an article in the 50s that he, quote, remembered the old folks talking about it, and they said, thank God there were no Negroes on that ship.
What the fuck?
Yeah. It was 83 years before their story came to light when, in 1995, Louise was finally interviewed by a French-speaking member of the Titanic Historical Society.
That's bananas that it took so long to get someone to translate her story.
Yeah. And they went and visited her, and it's a very interesting article. And of course, there are a number of phenomenal Black historians that I have leaned heavily on for the research in this, and they will obviously be linked. They're the MVPs here, obviously.
Right.
That same year that Louise was finally interviewed in 1995, I guess the SS Nomadic, which is the one that had taken them out to the Titanic, was still, I don't know if it was still operating or if it was, you know, like historical. I think it was just still
maybe doing some tours.
Yeah, I don't know what it was up to, but she did get back onto the SS Nomadic along with one other survivor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then 3 years later, she died in January of 98.
Can you imagine, like, how horrific that would be if her story wasn't told?
No, it could have been lost so easily. They found this out 3 years before her death.
You know it.
Of old age. Let's see, if she was born around, like, 1910 or so, she would have been, like, 88 when she died.
Wow.
And she also never married. Her and Simone had actually shared a bed with their mother for their entire lives.
Oh.
Can you imagine? Like, it gives me goosebumps to think about that feeling that is so vivid of scooping up your babies from their little sleepy cocoons when they're sleeping feet to feet, having your entire world turned upside down like this, and then fast forward 85 years and you're still sleeping in bed with them because of just the trauma of that.
Right.
Never heals fully. And people say that that's why Simone and Louise never married, because they were just so bonded by trauma that there was just a codependence and an overprotectiveness. I mean, is it overprotectiveness? I don't know.
I don't think it's overprotective.
I mean, I guess it sounds like they didn't necessarily get to live normal lives per se, so I guess I'd have to ask them if it was overprotective.
Right.
But it sounds like there was a wound there that never went
healed
away. Yeah. Even until they were all three old ladies. And it's so sweet, there are pictures of them, because I mean, Juliet was not that old. She had the three of them before she was 22.
In her 20s. Yeah.
In
her late teens, early 20s.
Yeah. So I mean, they were all three old ladies together, really.
Oh.
And that's, God, that's a weird thought, but yeah. That's the story of Joseph LaRouche and his family.
I'm so happy you did this. I am blown away.
I loved this.
Brianne.
I loved this.
You're right. We can totally quit now.
We're done. Sorry, guys. Yeah. Bye.
Mark Save Podcast is retiring.
You will never get to hear Melanie's poop story.
Sorry, guys. Oh my gosh, that was fantastic.
I have been dying. I have so much to do today, and I woke up today and I was like, how am I going to focus on the things I need to do this day?
You were really excited. So
I just wanted to like call you and tell you the story. It like, and then I'm like, but we have to record it. We're a podcast. I can't just call her and tell her story.
So I mean, as you guys know, we record super late at night, and so
noon right now.
And so, you know, we're messaging back and forth, and she's like, I've got some things to do, but I don't have to do it for a couple hours. You know, what do you think? And I'm like, absolutely, let's do it. And I'm like,
God, I need to stop. I'm always hinting at you. That's how you ended up co-hosting this podcast.
You just need to be straightforward.
Someone would start a disaster podcast.
I'm really good at picking up hints, huh?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Here we are recording that very disaster podcast in the morning.
It feels like such an awesome, I mean, it's a disaster, but like, what a way to start my day.
Right?
I wonder if this is how the horrible ghouls feel like sometimes I'll check our stats when our episode release at like 4 a.m. and there's already like 60 people that have like listened. I'm like, what the hell are you doing up so early?
I noticed that for the first like 6 hours, we tend to get 10 or 15 downloads an hour, which I mean, I compared to a big podcast, isn't that many, but like it drops at 4 a.m, guys.
Yeah. It's like blows my mind. I'm like, what? I need to know what they're doing.
Yeah. I know.
It's so cool.
So I...
Oh, yeah, we got a new Patreon, too. Can I shout her out
Yes, please do.
Michelle Kaz.
Michelle, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you so much. I sent off a couple stickers for you, not just one. I sent two. So thank you so much for your support. It helps a lot. I mean, because as much as we wish this thing was free to make... It's not.
No. Nope.
So every little bit helps, you know, because we have to pay for hosting and newspaper articles. God, I just went through that today where I was reading a newspaper article, but I don't have a subscription. So I went to go back in it and it wouldn't let me reread it. I'm like,
oh, that's the bane of my existence as a podcaster.
To start bootlegging again.
You've reached your subscription limit. Yeah. I was just thinking about the things.
Damn you, Wall Street Journal.
Yes. My, like, most Googled things. Inflation calculator.
Yep.
Constantly. Every episode, there's an inflation calculator. Obviously, Wikipedia. God bless Wikipedia.
Gosh. So. But yeah, so Michelle, thank you. You rock. We appreciate all of you guys that are supporting us. Listeners, we love you. And yeah.
Oh, yes. But Michelle, since you're here and you're listening and you obviously like us, why don't you send us some gossip?
Yes. We still want gossip.
We're still waiting.
It's the holiday season. There's got to be something.
There's got to be. So this was my favorite episode that I have ever researched. I feel like I could have just continued researching forever. And I never really would have been like, well, that's a wrap. Because, I mean, there's a certain point where you've just wrung dry all the sources on the LaRouche family. I can't find anything else on the internet that has a detail about their story that's not in this episode. I can't find it, and I dug deep. But, you know, everything I dig into, there's, you know, it's like, how did Waste work on the Titanic? What was second class life like on the Titanic? Did you know the Carpathia sank?
So basically what you're saying is you are going to bless us with a Titanic compilation.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt, there are at least 2 more Titanic episodes coming. It's not going to be too soon. I don't want to overwhelm people.
We'll spread them out.
It's 100% coming. One of them may be a plot twisteroo one like this. The other one won't be. We will see.
I'm pumped.
We will see.
Super pumped.
But, Melanie, did you know the Carpathia sank?
What?
The freaking Carpathia. It sank.
When?
In, like, 1918.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, July 15th, 1918.
Well, that's bananas.
Yeah, it got, like, blown up or something. I don't know. I found that out as I was waiting for Skype to connect. And the audio guy was behind me going, you cannot go down another rabbit hole right
don't
now.
Do
you
it. Can't don't do it. Don't do it.
And I'm like, I'm not. I'm just reading real quick. Also, I was trying to find, this is the rabbit hole that never fully was. I was trying to find some information about what the nursery was like on the SS France.
Because I want to know that. I'm actually super intrigued by that.
I have so many questions by that. I only got to spend like 1 minute going down that rabbit hole. So I will very briefly summarize for you what I found down it. And that is, I found, and I did not dig deep at all. Like, this is literally a 1 minute Google search, but I found a picture called Nursery on Board that says a scene at the nursery aboard the SS France 1962. And it looks just like a modern cruise ship nursery. Like,
send that to me. We'll post it.
I will, but it may cost $500 to buy. I'm not sure. I'll send you that and you can see what you think.
I'll take a look.
I mean, you can definitely look at it. I'm sure we can post the link to it at least.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah, cheap. But it looks just, I mean, I'm not sure if not paying $500 for a single image is cheap, but
I want that signed by the photographer.
Yeah, I guess if we want to be at that level, we need to up our Patreon game a lot. So yeah, this picture has some cute little 60s kids, and it looks just like a modern cruise ship kids club. They're playing with Legos. It is pretty adorable, but I really do want to know more about nursery combinations on old-timey ships, and I think I will put that in my Titanic Miscellanea episode.
I love it. I love it so much.
Okay.
Well, Brianne, this was most excellent. Thank you so much.
I'm giddy about this episode.
Me too. I can't wait to hear it.
Okay. Well, go on about your day. All of our kids have watched cartoons long enough.
I know. Their eyeballs are bleeding. All right, y'all. Have a good day.
Goodbye.
Bye. Hey, Horrible Ghouls. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you would like to share your personal MarkSafe moment, you can send it to us at MarkSafePodcast@gmail.com. Please give our podcast a rate, review, and subscribe, and tell your buddies about us, too. That goes a long way. If you want to further elevate your support, check out our MarkSafe Patreon page, where we have shoutouts, goodies, and some bonus content in the works. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thanks again, and as always, stay safe.